just to get down. Devin now. I wake up just to get down. Devin now. Hey, I wake up just to get down.
I don't know if they're
develop these bars for the developing stars, whoa. Ranked by their stars though, but they know just who they are. The knowledge is deep, man, cause college is bleak, man. The knees of the bees, man, people's champ, man, true now. I trust them with everything, every conference giving me confidence. Hipping is hopping and really no stopping them. Make you a champion, y'all put a sock in it, woo! But this is life, bro, they're at it all night though. So you can just drive slow and get down with the Devi crew.
I wake up just to get down. Devi now. I wake up just to get down. Devi now. Hey, I wake up just to get down.
I don't know if they're
all right, everybody, I want to welcome everybody into another fun-filled episode. This is Devi Happy Hour, episode 30. Your source of knowledge for Devi knowledge as it pertains to college football landscape. I don't know however I normally say that. Anyways, welcome everybody back. It was a hell of a good weekend last weekend. Probably one of the best weekends we'll ever see in college football. It was so much fun. First, I want to introduce my co-host before we get diving into that. First up, we have Matt Griffith, Mr. Deltron. How you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing great, sir. And then, coincidentally, or just how luck would have it, on one of the best Saturdays we've had in forever, I had to drive 3 hours for a family function and turn on, drive back, and try to sneak off into corners and get updates and whatever else. But thankfully, I had you two and Twitter to keep me very much posted as to what was going on. But yeah, excellent weekend. Can't wait to get into it.
Right. Everybody's like, look, he's over in the corner. He's probably texting his girlfriend. No, man, I'm checking the college football scores. Man, leave me alone, dude. Anyway.
More important stuff than that.
Exactly. All right, next up, we have Mr. Ray GQ. Mr. Ray Garvin, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. Excited to talk to you guys tonight, man. This is really one of the highlights of my week to talk to you guys and just go over college Devi prospects. And coming off of last Saturday, we got a lot to talk about, so I'm ready to get into it.
Yep, dive right in. Real quick, though, make sure you listen to the Destination Devi podcast. Ray did an awesome episode again this week, so make sure you check that out. And one of the things he talked about a lot, but I'm going to make him talk about it some more, is Alabama-LSU, man. It was a hell of a game. Joe Burrow more or less stamped as Heisman. I don't see anybody beating him as long as he continues playing halfway decent even. You know, like, I think it's his to lose at this point, although Hurts has some things to say about that. So anyways, just real quick, I already heard a lot from you this week, Ray, but Matt, what was your initial takeaways? What were you most impressed about the game after rewatching it twice on condensed versions this week?
Yeah, man, I had to play some catch up. So honestly, the biggest takeaway was how bad of a pocket or how bad the room that Tua had to work with. It was the defense of LSU that was getting more pressure on Tua than the defense of Alabama that was getting any type of pressure on Burrow. So Burrow had cleaner pocket most of the game. But when I watched it the second time, I kind of felt that Tua was the better quarterback in the game. Although it doesn't look like that when you look at the end score, the stat sheet was a different thing. Forget stats, all that. When I watch a quarterback play, when I watch somebody in the pocket, when I watch somebody deciphering defenses and coverages and all that, I still thought Tua was the better quarterback. I guess it's a different story, and we'll get into the draft stock stuff. But the other big takeaway for me was, not even a big takeaway, but the stamp that Jerry Jeudy put on his, like, next level freakishly athletic and quickness that is unmatched. Devonta Smith, terrific game. Henry Ruggs, burner, fantastic. Judy's a different kind of nasty to me, and when I watch that again, freakish. That's all I can put on my little notes. Najee leveled himself up. He looked really good. It's hard to – you have to, like, really remind yourself that he's 6'2", 230 when he runs and does the things that he does. And then I think last but not least, and this was, like, the stamp for the whole game, CEH, as he should be called. But Edwards-Helaire, man, he was out there to win the game, and he's out there to put his name on the draft boards. You know what I mean? He was out there working, and I think he really stocked up the most out of the entire – oh, man, there's a pick going on in the background. I think he stocked up the most by the time that game was over. But yeah, man, I was really surprised with the lack of room and area to work that they were given to throughout that game. That was kind of the big thing for me.
He said CEH. Don't you mean MJD? Anyways, that's...
Yeah, maybe.
I saw that comp, and I'm like, ooh, yeah, I love that comp for him. He reminds me so much of Maurice Jones-Drew, man. So after somebody said that, I'm like, ooh, I like that. I liked your comp for Najee Harris that Melo's going to take, too, the Steven Jackson. That was a brilliant comp, man. So, Ray, what do you think, man? Do you think Joe Burrow's the number one quarterback in this class now, or is it still Tua for you?
It's still Tua, and I think I walked away from this game even more impressed with Tua than I was going in. To be 20 days removed from ankle surgery, he was clearly not 100%. And there were some things that he did climbing the pocket. I didn't expect him to move around at all. Like, I expected him to be an immobile statue back there. And he was just like, the hell with it. I'm gutting it out. I'm trying to win this. He was rolling out. He was evading defenders in the pocket. I've said it. I said it before the game. I've been saying it all year. A, the loss of Dylan Moses really crippled Alabama's defense more than people gave it credit for. And B, that offensive line is just, it hadn't been good the past couple of years. Tua's been getting smoked back there, and it was happening in this game. They couldn't block anybody, and I know people are going to point to, well, he just had a couple of long bombs to Devonta Smith. Go look at his pocket manipulation and how he stepped up in the pocket. After the game, they showed a shot of Tua. It looked like he can barely walk off the field. I mean, his ankle was in that bad of shape. But as far as a talent at the quarterback position, I walked away even more impressed with Tua. I think he played fantastic. I think he's still deserving of a Heisman invitation. And it sucks because the past two seasons he's had a chance to win it, but injuries, you know, his end of the season last year kind of kept him from winning it. He's not going to win it this year, but I think he deserves an invitation. But I walked away very impressed with Tua. I walked away stocked down a little bit on Henry Ruggs, and on my show, Jesse Reeves kind of talked about it. I love Ruggs' talent. I think he's the third best receiver on that team behind Devonta Smith and Jerry Jeudy, clearly. Very impressed with Najee Harris. He's somebody that I think is – we need to start talking about him in the back end of the first round of Dynasty rookie drafts. Clyde Edwards-Helaire looks like a stud. I don't know if he's Maurice Jones-Drew. I don't know if he – to me, he's a little more Ray Rice, because Ray Rice was very dynamic in the receiving game early in his career coming out of Rutgers. Both similar stature, but I don't think you can go wrong with either player. And I think, like you said, Jerry Jeudy, if you go watch the very first play of the game, when Tua delivered 20-yard strike to Henry Ruggs, watch what Jerry Jeudy does to Christian Fulton. I mean, he left him, he was on the ground, like crossover and one mixtape on the ground. I thought it was a fantastic game, but Joe Burrow did what Joe Burrow I expected him to do. But two is still QB1 for me. I'm even more impressed with him.
I'm in the same boat, because I saw on Twitter, and everybody's been real quick to crown Joe Burrow as the new number one. And I mean, he looked impressive. He was very, very impressive. I'll not take that away. I think he's two, and it's not very far off two. But I love how gutsy Tua is. And this isn't, you know, Joe Burrow did it on this big stage. But Tua's done it on this big stage like 15 times in his career at this point. I mean, he came in the national title game 2 years ago and, you know, took over the world then. He's done it. And he's done it over and over and over and over and over. And you can't really knock either of them, honestly. But like you said, I was really impressed with his gutsiness. You could see he wasn't moving like he's supposed to move. And if you're worried about the injuries, I wouldn't be terribly worried about the injuries. They're not like they've been, you know, crazy bad injuries. But, you know, he has had several ankle issues. So, but, yeah, I have no issues at all. And I think Tua's, you know, a pretty good, decent amount younger than Burrow as well. So, yeah, you can't go wrong either way. I think the first two picks of the draft are going to be those two guys, you know, barring some crazy thing. And I was also very, very impressed with Devontae Smith as well. he looked like he was right there with Judy, and it was pretty impressive. I can't remember. I meant to drag up the video of it. There was a play where Judy came across the middle and stopped and turned so quick, and I mean, just to watch that type of moves and things he does. And then, like, he pointed out the blocking. I saw several instances where he just blocked the living crap out of someone. That's sweet to see out of somebody, especially that high profile. So, I mean, we were kind of talking about it Saturday and Sunday. We were just, I could have recorded a two-hour podcast Saturday night after watching this game, man. Just talking about the game. So much fun to watch. But, you know, on top of that, there was a couple other amazing games. I don't know, Ray, did you stay up that night and watch the Iowa State-Oklahoma game as well? Or
I did. I watched that game. You know I've got to watch Jalen Hurts and my man CeeDee Lamb, so I did watch that game and was impressed by Brock Purdy more than anybody else in the game.
He is the real deal, baby.
He is the real deal. He's wild, but he's wild yet controlled. Not wild as far as his passes, but just – I mean, that dude is out there juking out defensive backs. He's running for touchdowns. He's throwing off his back foot on a dime. He's delivering to his tight ends and his wide receivers. I walked away and I said, that guy's clear-cut QB3 for me in the 2021 class right now behind Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, who are tier one. He's the top of tier two for me. I know players like JT Daniels and there's some other guys, but right now what I've seen out of Iowa State quarterback Brock Purdy, very impressed by him. You know, Jalen Hurts' numbers were good, but I think it was a bit of a down game for him. He was really, really antsy in the pocket, and I think that's one of the – you get the good with the bad with a player like that. He still had, I believe, close to 400 total yards of offense, 5 touchdowns. CeeDee Lamb was ridiculous once again. I mean, somebody said it on Twitter, and I can't think of who it was. I said it on the DDP. CeeDee Lamb is the fastest, not so fast guy in college football, because everyone's like, oh, he's not that fast. He's not that fast. You watch him. Oh, he's not that fast. He's not that fast. And then he catches a 2-yard bubble screen and is outrunning entire defenses for 70 yards. How the hell does he do it? I don't know. And I promise you, I say this in jest, but when he drops a high 4.4 at the combine, everybody's going to be scratching their head saying, where did this come from? But one of a black eye on the game, and it sucks for the player. But Trey Sermon, I was watching the play where he I don't know if it was an ACL, MCL, but I know he's out for the season. It looked bad, but prayers up for Trey Sermon. But I did watch that game and was impressed.
CD thing, I totally get it. You see what he does on the field, and it's not going to be that straight line speed that gets it. It's that speed that he uses his angles well and acceleration, and you know the way he gets, because you see the way he goes across the field, and he doesn't lose speed when he does it. I think that's what makes him so, yeah, like he weaves through defenders and across the field, and he doesn't lose any speed doing it. I think that's what makes him so damn fast. Is like, it's not the straight line speed, it's the speed that he uses. It's amazing. He is so much fun to watch, even though you keep posting that provocative picture of him like dripping going across the field. I'm like, Ray, what's up, man? Come on now, man.
he's just got football speed, right? I mean, he's not going to be your, you know, everybody knows that guy who would be like the combine superstar, combine All-American, whatever. Who cares? Put CD on a football field and watch him do his thing. The one person who didn't look fast at all to me and doesn't, I don't know if he'd test well fast, Kennedy Brooks looks slow. And I don't know. I mean, I love Trey Sermon. I had Trey Sermon over Brooks. Brooks just looked slow to me, and I was not real. He actually had great numbers, though, at the end of the day. Defenses were nothing to write home about throughout that game. But the other thing that stood out, too, Breece Hall's balance. He's got really good balance, man, for a young back that he is. I was kind of impressed with that. And then I know there's been a lot of back and forth floating around with some of the, you know, higher paid professionals that do this thing, talking about Jalen Hurts is may go undrafted or day three. I don't think he sees day three, man. If he makes it through round three, I'd be surprised. And even though that was a down game, he's got a lot of ability. Even the simple things like him just pumping those legs and driving in for a touchdown at the goal line. The dude is so strong, and he's just a different kind of breed. So if he makes it past round two, I would be really surprised.
If that wasn't enough, we had another big game with Minnesota prevailing over Penn State, and that was another game where it was kind of, you know, you had your stars, your Rashad Bateman, you know, who had just a monster game. I for some reason don't have the stats pulled up. I think he had like 207 yards receiving, something like that, with a couple touchdowns. He just owned that game, and Tanner Morgan looked amazing. And Penn State just, I mean, they hung with them, and they kind of came back toward the end, but they looked so overmatched. Like, their running backs weren't doing much. The quarterback, who's been pretty impressive this year, Sean Clifford, looked just atrocious. And, I mean, Hamler looked good, and then Freiermuth looked good. They couldn't block either of those guys, and Penn State still couldn't do anything. So that was a fun game. I kind of had a, you know, that just felt like one of those games where you're just really rooting for the underdog, and Minnesota just kind of thumped them in the mouth, and now they got a couple big games coming up with Iowa and Nebraska, or Wisconsin, sorry. So Penn State, or Minnesota, looking really good, jumping up to number 6, was it? Or an 8, I think, in the BCS latest ranking. So they're making a pretty good climb, but they still have also probably Ohio State at the end of the rainbow. So, yeah, congratulations for winning the West.
Dwight did not tell you guys on the last episode that the way the rankings shaped up, Alabama, you see where they're at, right? They're getting in. They're getting in.
Oh, they are.
Because Georgia and LSU would have to play, right? And that loser in the SEC title game, Alabama's getting in. And quite frankly, I still think they're one of the four best teams in college.
I don't even see Georgia getting past Auburn this week, but we'll talk about that later. So, yeah, it's like, congratulations, you're number 4. But, yeah, we'll see how long you can hold on to that, buddy. I don't know if you guys had any takeaways from that game. It was a fun game to watch.
You know, I became a Journey Brown fan. I haven't watched much of Penn State at all this year. And I was big Ricky Slade fan preseason going into the year. But he's barely even gotten the field. It feels like Journey Brown is smooth. I'm a big fan of fluidity. And it's hard to quantify that. And you can't put that on a metric or whatever else. But he's got that thing that I like when I watch a running back or a receiver play. And, man, I became a fan. I'm going to look into him definitely more. Like you said, Bateman had the numbers, but that contested touchdown that Tyler Johnson pulled in up the sideline was the receiver play of the day for me. And then you nailed it. Clifford was reckless and bad, and I don't know what was going on there, but that Tyler Johnson catch and Journey Brown as a whole, man, that was my big takeaways from that game.
Yeah, good call, good call. He definitely ran away with that backfield, I thought Journey did. He ended up with 14 for 124. That's right. Why they didn't give him 40 carries, I don't know, man. Like, he was just destroying it. Ray, do you have anything else, bud?
Nah, you guys nailed it, man. I was at the Children's Museum for the majority of that game, so I came in when Penn State was trying to come back, but, I just saw highlights, but you guys covered it quite well.
I would have dropped those kids off at the museum, and no, I'm just kidding. I'll be back in 2 hours. Oh, wait, we can't do that anymore, can we? All righty. We're going to go through, we got some trade stuff to talk about later in the episode, but real quick, we'll go through our normal regional recaps like we do. Matt, you want to take us out west? What do you got for games of the week out there this week, bud?
The West has been boring, man. I mean, for games of the week anyways, but you mentioned it last week. Everyone's been beating each other up, so we have another middle-of-the-road Pac-12 game for the game of the week for me, and just because it's got the most Devy potential in it, and that's Arizona State going to Oregon State. You got Jaden Daniels, Ayuk, you know, Benjamin, Isaiah Hodges, Artavis Pierce, who's been holding off Justin Jefferson, who's the one I really like, but, you know, it shouldn't be some spectacular game. I would think the Arizona State would win this one. They are going up to Oregon State, but, you know, just some good players in here that I want to watch, continue to watch. To see what he's doing, you know, if he can really, like, where in the second or third round you'll be getting him in your rookie drafts, you know what I mean, is what it feels like. But Isaiah Hodgins continues to climb. Brandon Ayuk is continuing to climb. So it's really just for some of the players. I'm not expecting, like, a terrific game from this one, though.
Totally get that, man. Who's your this is nice. I actually saw quite a bit of back and forth on Twitter about this cat this week. Who's your Devy prospect of the week, man?
Yeah, and it's kind of full circle because I feel like in the beginning of the season, we hit this with a deep Devy prospect of the week before he was really getting some of the love. And digging into Warren Jackson, the receiver from Colorado State, a little bit more. And the most impressive thing is he's 6'6". And on one hand, that makes you a little bit nervous, right? On the other hand, everybody wants to love a big receiver. Everybody wants, like, a Megatron. Everybody wants this Hakeem Butler type guy to come out and dominate. For whatever reason, that's just attractive to fantasy football fans. It doesn't always work. You know, the 5'11", 185 pound guy seems, you know, to stick a lot more and have a little bit more longevity and stuff. But I really like what Warren Jackson's been doing. I followed Preston Williams really closely last year and was a big fan of watching what he did. Warren Jackson played last year. Didn't play as, you know, he took a back seat to what Preston was doing. He also struggled with injuries in the early part of the season. So this year has been his year. I didn't put his stats on here, but he's clearly leading the team. I want to say he has 800-something yards receiving, 55 catches, 6 touchdowns, doing really well. But then you got the things that you need to look at on how that translates, right? His high point in ball tracking are strong suits, which makes sense because he's 6'6". The guy's a giant. But one thing I didn't love about Preston was he lacked acceleration off the line, and he was only 6'4". Warren Jackson, 6'6", actually has pretty good acceleration for the longer being a longer guy. Usually the longer guys take a little bit longer to build up, and he's clearly a mismatch. Like, there is so many plays where, you know, Colorado State has not clearly not known for their quarterbacks, and they've had 3 different ones shuffle in this year, and it was the same story last year. He's just able to – they're hucking balls up to him like it's a Thanksgiving Day pickup game at somebody's park. You know what I mean? And it's silly, and it makes sense. And you put, I mean, what are the average corner heights, Ray, right? I mean, we're talking 5'9" to 6' is a big dude. And then what I really liked about him, some of my favorite things, he's a good character guy, very mature, very respectable. Every interview was yes, sir, no, sir, blah, 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 you know. And I guess Coach Bobo threw out a couple things early in the season saying that Warren Jackson has the potential to be the best receiver to ever come out of Colorado State. And if you look at, like, the past 6 years, so it's been Preston Williams, it's been Michael Gallup, it's been, who am I missing? Oh, Rashard Higgins, who's now getting a little bit more highlight because Callaway got cut. But they've had some good receivers come out of there in the past few years. And for Bobo to give him that kind of love, just getting the season going, I got to like that a little bit. But it makes sense. He's such a good guy. Like, you can just tell he's a respectable dude. You'd want him on your team. He's not, you know, Preston Williams is the opposite of that. There was a lot of character flaws or concerns with him. So I really like what I see. I don't particularly fall in love with the big guy like that. But, you know, there's people going ham over Colin Johnson. And I don't know if you can make the argument that Colin Johnson's better than Warren Jackson. And he's up there in Colorado State not getting any type of big name hype. So good receiver, good talented guy. I'm curious to see how he progresses and what happens next in his journey, man.
Ray, do you remember who you were going back and forth with on Twitter the other day about Warren? He said he was like a top 5 wide receiver in the past.
Yeah, his name is Austin. I think it's Austin Vernay. Yeah.
He had some big
Warren Jackson fan.
Yeah. Yeah, he had some videos and he had some good points, some good arguments for him. So yeah, it was nice to, you know, I like to see the good back and forth on Twitter like that, you know, where it doesn't have to result to, you know, just name slinging and, you know, bad mouthing and stuff. You don't ever get engaged in that, but I'm just saying sometimes people try to drag you that way. It was a good, he defended himself well. I always like seeing that. So, all right, Ray, take us down to the dirty south. You got several games of the week as usual.
Yeah, there's some good ones down south, man. You got Oklahoma at Baylor. That's the ABC game, the night game, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun when you get two of the top teams in the country, and they're in the Big 12, and it's on ABC. You can expect minimal defense and a lot of scoring, and both of these teams do just that. I'm excited to see Denzel Mims, wide receiver out of Baylor. Not getting enough buzz. I think he's a really, really solid wide receiver prospect. 44 receptions, 675 yards, 8 TDs, 6'3", 215 pounds, and the kid catches everything in his vicinity. And Baylor has done a good job of producing quality NFL prospects. Now, they may not have panned out so well at the next level, but Terrence Williams, Corey Coleman, Josh Gordon, there's another guy that I'm missing, Terrence, Josh, there's somebody else from Baylor here recently. So they produce NFL wide receivers, and I think Denzel Mims is next up. The guy throwing him the ball is a sleeper Debbie pick, and I think he'll come back for a senior year. But Brewer, the quarterback, Charlie Brewer, gutsy kid, can make all the throws. You know, Baylor has that spread and shred sort of offense, but Matt Rhule is a very, very good coach. And Brewer looks like a more than capable quarterback, so I think this is going to be a big stage for him. primetime game on ABC. Oklahoma's defense has fallen off of the face of the earth this season. I don't know what happened to him after the first couple of weeks. But another chance to see Jalen Hurts and CeeDee Lamb. And like Matt said, Kennedy Brooks, I was high on him coming in the year, but the guy has absolutely no wiggle, and he's not very fast at all. I think Ramondre Stevenson is the better running back of the two, the junior college transfer. So that would be a fun game to watch. And then you've got Texas versus Iowa State, Brock Purdy and Breece Hall. Breece Hall for me right now is the number two 2022 running back prospect right behind Zach Charbonnet. He's big. He's physical. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. Really smooth. Reminds me a little bit of a poor man's Joe Mixon, but that's not to shame Breece Hall because I think he's a really talented kid. So watching that game. And then, of course, Georgia at Auburn. You know, that's going to be a fantastic matchup. CBS game at 2:30 Central Time. And you've got players all over the field on both sides of the ball. You know, Jake Fromm, DeAndre Swift, George Pickens, Bo Nix, Seth Williams, the two running backs, Whitlow and DJ Williams, and then you got defensive linemen and cornerbacks. So there are a lot of good games down south. You know, my boy Jalen Rager plays. TCU's got a game. So there's a lot of good games down south this week.
That Oklahoma-Baylor one's particularly enticing. Baylor's got a hell of a chip on their shoulder right now. They're 9-0, only ranked 13th. And I mean, they would love nothing more than to take it to Oklahoma. So, yeah, who's your Devy Prospect of the Week this week, bud?
All right, my Devy Prospect of the Week is somebody that I have. I've given a lot of heat to this guy this season, and that's Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm. And I think he's got a very good opportunity in this game against Auburn, in Auburn, to show that he is one of the top quarterbacks in the 2020 class. Right now, for me, he is not. I would take quite a few quarterbacks over Jake Fromm, but he's got a fantastic opportunity, again, with the spotlight on him to perform. So just a little bit about Jake Fromm. He is not a dynamic quarterback by any stretch, and that's not to say he's not. He can move around in the pocket a little bit, but he is not a running quarterback by any stretch, but he's not a statue either, right? But he's just unexciting. He's only thrown for 13 touchdowns this season. He's a junior. He's been playing since a true freshman, so he should have, you know, all the confidence in the world, have a command of that offense. He's got fewer than 2,000 passing yards on this season. And what really gets me is his yards per attempt is right at 8 yards, which is the lowest of his career. And a lot of people will say, well, he doesn't have all the weapons and all. I don't want to hear that. He's a third-year starter at Georgia. Get the ball downfield. Make a play. Take some chances. He's not going to take any risk. He's going to keep it safe. He's going to throw efficient passes. He's going to throw it to his running backs and Cager and Pickens and make a spectacular catch every now and then. But he's just, 8 yards of pass attempt, that is pathetic for a quarterback. So if he can win and look good versus Auburn, I think that'll go a long way to help him move up back in my rankings to be a top five quarterback in the 2020 class. I consistently see him going round one in NFL mock drafts, and I think he will. You know, I think he's one of those kids who will go to the combine. He's going to interview well. He's a leader. You know, he doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't turn the ball over. But we're talking about fantasy. And in fantasy, you want somebody who's going to push the ball down the field and score you points. And it's not going to be Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm may be a good quarterback in the NFL, but that's not going to help you win fantasy championships. So I want to see what he does on this big stage against a 7-2 Auburn team. Make it happen, Jake Fromm. Let's go.
Yeah, he's got a couple big games coming up because after that he's got A&M and then he's also got the championship game for. So he's got a lot of chance to raise his stock. So, yeah, he gets a lot of flack, but he's just a safe quarterback. You know, I don't think he'll ever be one of those guys that's going to, you know, lead the team. But, yeah, who knows? So, I mean, you guys got anything else from the dirty?
Jalen Hurd was the other Baylor guy. Thank you, Matt, I knew it was somebody that I was missing, but Jalen Hurd, that's it.
Not that we're sleeping on the North, but who is the game of the week up in the North?
I don't care what's the game of the week, man. This is Michigan State, Michigan week, baby. This is my this is my Super Bowl, man. Luckily, it has been kind of quiet so far. I work at a place that has, like, some of the most, like some Michigan boosters. We actually have ex-Michigan football players working where I work. John Navarro is one of our plant managers, actually. I don't know if you guys remember him. Yeah, so this is a huge, huge week for me, man. Michigan State's been quiet. Obviously, they come off of four losses, and Michigan's been playing better. But it's just this is a big week for us. You know, like I want to see Elijah Collins go up against that Michigan. I think it's Elijah Collins and Zach Charbonnet are the most two most important ones in this game that I'm going to be watching from like a Devy standpoint. Man, this is a game. It gets hostile up here, man. You don't do not text me that day during this game because I'd go off on a fool, man. As long as there's none of the pregame crap like there was last year. So that's the game I'm most looking forward to, and it probably is the game of the week up here. I'm really excited to watch Minnesota and Iowa, too. Another big test for Minnesota, playing against a pretty darn good defense in Iowa, and they're going to Iowa. So that should be a game where a lot of fun, maybe not as much Devy. And then this game lost a lot of luster. I was really looking forward to Wake Forest at Clemson. That was going to be my game of the week, and then Sage Surratt is out for the year. And that just makes me so sad. Because I actually thought Wake Forest had a legitimate shot to hang with Clemson. Right now, they have Clemson favored by 34, which is crazy to me. Because I still love my boy Jamie Newman in Wake Forest. And I think it's going to be a better game than that. But I think it would have been a hell of a lot better if Sage Surratt was on the field. This is like Clemson's last big test before their ACC title game. So, yeah, and other than that, and then the Navy at Notre Dame should be a really fun game to watch from like a, you know, just the contrasting styles of football. And Navy's bringing, I think they're 9-1 this year. I think, let me see, I had it just pulled up there a second ago. But they're beating people like they always do. And just a fun game for the contrast of styles. And once again, we don't have the shine of the South, but we got Michigan State and Michigan. And this is like Michigan State's biggest game is Michigan, whereas Michigan will always say their biggest rival is Ohio State. But we hate each other, so it's going to be a fun one, man. It's always hostile. So I don't know if you guys got anything on any of those games.
No, I'm excited for you for the hometown rivalry, man. That's a big weekend. That's a lot of fun. And noted, I'll leave you alone during that game.
I've actually never been to one of the games, which is just like a criminal thing. I cannot believe I've never been to a Michigan State and Michigan game, so.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear about your Devy prospect because I've had a couple of people ask me about this guy and I don't know much about him.
Right, he came into the season in like a crazy battle which he ended up losing, but then God, I can't remember who the guys. I had it wrote down.
Anikstead.
Anikstead, there you go. And Anikstead won the job, but then he got hurt before the season started, basically. And then they said, all right, Tanner Morgan. And Morgan started off a little slow. I mean, he had good games. He's got great wide receivers to throw to, obviously. But I've been impressed watching his game-to-game. And the way he looked the other day, he looked absolutely phenomenal. His poise under pressure, he moves really well in the pocket. He's got great weapons to throw to, and he knows how to use them. He's only a sophomore. He's only started 9 games, so he's got, you know, he's could figure into this 2021 class as well. Great size at 6'2", 215. He's got, you know, enough of the build. He can take some hits and things like that. And I've just been very impressed with his moxie, too. Like, the way he commands that team, and he knows he plays with that swagger that you like to see an underdog quarterback play for. There's certain things, you know, like the intangibles that you can't teach, you know, like the leadership and things. And this team gravitates around him. And he's just got that blue-collar way he plays. It fits the school so well. And he throws a pretty ball, too. I mean, it's not just all about that, but I think that's what makes him – what really interests me most in him is watching his leadership. And he kind of – he's a P.J. Fleck quarterback, man. You watch P.J. Fleck's energy, and that's how Tanner Morgan plays. Like, if it was like an extension of himself, it is amazing to watch him. And I think he's going to be a stud. He's got the numbers. On the season is almost 70% passing, 2,100 yards, 21 – touchdowns against only 4 interceptions. He's had a couple games where he had one game where he almost hit 400 yards. That was against Purdue. So, like I said, he did start off a little slow, and he's had a couple games. You know, Nebraska and Illinois were rough games, and even against Maryland, he was kind of quieter. But then he's had some games where he was really called upon, like this Penn State game. They were shutting down that run game, and he took over, and it was great to see. We talk about that catch that Tyler Johnson made and the ones that Bateman made, but his placement on those were only those guys could catch it. And that's what you really like to see. So I've been really impressed. I want to see what he does next year. I don't think he's going to lose this job now. I think it's his to keep. So watching him next year and what he does when the expectation is actually on him will be key. Because right now, you know, when they don't have that expectation, you can kind of play without, you know, that gunslinger, you know, kind of like Trevor Lawrence was last year. Then you get all the expectation put on you, and then things change. So be curious to see how he responds next year.
So we have a host of questions and things to talk about in our own version of the mailbag.
Yeah, we'll do, yeah, kind of a mailbag, trade discussions. What we wanted to do is, I know I got a little flack from Tom on Twitter about having trade deadlines. If you don't have a trade deadline, I don't care. But this is just kind of a, what do we do at the end of the year? Because at this point, you definitely know what your team's doing, I think. If you're going to win the championship, or you're going to be the make of playoffs, or if you're just going to be floundering going into the playoffs, just watching from the outside, you kind of have an idea of where your team's heading. So now is when you start seeing people try to cash in those Devy chips, you know, those guys that are being held and things like that. And so we had a couple trades that came in, and then I kind of wanted to talk a little more to Ray also about, Ray has talked about how he's selling his 2020 picks, whereas everybody seems to want to buy right now. And I want to explore that a little bit more, because I think that's key, because what you can get for a 2020 pick right now is silly. I mean, even a 2020 second you can get like great value for. So that kind of is against the Devy, because if you have 2020 picks and that don't have Devy, obviously they're worth a lot more than a Devy depleted. So, all right, we'll start going through some of these trades here. mine, I actually texted you guys about this one. A guy offered me Nick Chubb for Josh Jacobs and Garrett Wilson. I did end up declining it, but he came back with Nick Chubb and a second and a third for Josh Jacobs and Garrett Wilson. So whatever, he really wants Josh Jacobs, which I thought was kind of crazy. This is one, if you guys want to talk about a little bit, it's kind of one where I was trying to judge. I mean, Nick Chubb was, I think, he's 2 years older than Josh Jacobs, if I remember right. And Chubb's obviously got a little bit of competition from Kareem Hunt now, is what it looks like. So whereas Josh Jacobs, it's all his. And then I am super duper high on Garrett Wilson. So that was almost, I almost just smash rejected it, but then I started thinking about it, and that's why I bounced it off you guys, because I was curious what you guys thought. You know, like, what was your reasoning for not wanting that trade, Ray?
And you would have been the guy getting Nick Chubb, correct? Initially, because I think Josh Jacobs and Nick Chubb are in the same tier of running back. I think that's you've got the same tier running back. Whether you have Nick Chubb a tick or two higher, they're both in the same tier to me, as me. And then you've got the tantalizing prospect of wide receiver Garrett Wilson. Now, I think by him adding a second and a third in the 2020 class, that probably would have swayed me. And I think it's panic. It's Kareem Hunt panic, right? Kareem Hunt's eating away at Nick Chubb's carries, and I think you can take advantage of owners like that in situations like this. We're recording on Thursday night, and we're watching the game, and Kareem Hunt looks fantastic. He's not going to be there forever. And if you can capitalize on an owner who is fearful of Kareem Hunt stealing the job, then I think getting, I know you love Garrett Wilson, but if you can get Nick Chubb plus a second, plus a third, and you're really not downgrading running back, you know, you may have somebody who thinks Jacobs is a little bit better, but it's not a downgrade, and then you're getting two picks in this upcoming draft, I think that's something I probably would have accepted, and I'm with you. My only thing with Garrett Wilson is, as much as we like him, as much as we're excited about his prospect, he's still 2 years removed from even stepping foot on an NFL practice field, and so much can happen between now and then. I think if you really wanted to, you probably can get Garrett Wilson back in a year or two, maybe. But I want to win. I want to win, and I think Nick Chubb and those picks help me win quicker. Will potentially can help me win quicker than Josh Jacobs and Garrett Wilson.
Right, yeah, those second and third, they are Devy depleted, but I can't remember how deep our league is.
Well, let me just real quick, just with the Devy depleted, I went and looked through, Ryan McDowell's got the Kitchen Sink League, and I went through and looked at how many players weren't selected with all these analyst experts, right? There's still, Joe Burrow is still there. Jalen Hurts is still there. Devin Duvernay is still there. Isaiah Hodgins is still there. I mean, so all of these players, Brandon Ayuk is still there. So all these players amongst the group of, like, big-time guys, you know, Devy depleted, I get it. But, man, every year players emerge out of nowhere. So they're still valuable to me.
Right, because then they also a second and third usually will include, you can get the first pick of those freshmen that are coming in next year too, you know, the highly recruited, you know, so they are not entirely worthless, but they are, you know, those first couple are obviously worth, you know, like your Joe Burrow and your Clyde Edwards-Helaire, stuff like that, you know, the guys will slip through the cracks. So another one I saw, that this was pretty impressive, Evan Engram, Kevin or Keenan Allen for Brian Edwards, mid-2021st and early 2020 Devy first. What was your thoughts on that one, Matt?
See, when I first saw that one, and this was Brandon's, I believe, I would have leaned the Evan Engram, Keenan Allen side. I like Brian Edwards a lot. I don't, you know, he might not even be top five receivers in this class, but I like him. That was a depleted 2021st, and then obviously a Devy 2021st, from what I understood, how I read that. I like Keenan Allen a lot, though. I've reached out to you guys several times about him recently, and I like Evan Engram a lot. So I think you know you're getting higher tier guys currently in the NFL in good situations for the most part, where Evan Engram's not going anywhere. Keenan Allen's biggest issue is Phillip Rivers in the Chargers, but I would have probably skipped the picks and the prospect and Brian Edwards and stuck with the studs currently in the NFL doing it with that one myself.
Yeah, that's a team makeup. You know, if you want to win now, you're going to get that Evan Engram, Keenan Allen side for sure. Although Evan Engram is still pretty young. Keenan's still, you'd think, have at least 4 or 5 years. So for me, I would take that side as well. I just got a crazy trade offer. This is offline. Todd Gurley, Mo Sanu, and Tyler Eifert for Joe Mixon. Looking at it like, huh?
Say it again. Gurley, Sanu,
and
Eifert.
Sanu, Eifert for Mixon.
I'd keep Mixon.
Yeah, I think so too. That's kind of a crazy offer. That's amazing how far Gurley's fell, isn't it?
It is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm looking like, Gurley, smash accept. Wait, hold on. Wait a second. Who is Todd
Gurley? I don't think it's all Todd Gurley, man. Something's wrong with the Rams. And somebody on Twitter asked me the other day, can you see a situation where Todd Gurley forces a trade next year? Like, the Rams don't want that contract, I don't believe. He just doesn't look – it doesn't look good, you know, and losing hurts a lot of things. But, I mean, they're taking him off the field, and when I see him play, he looks fine to me. It doesn't look like he's limping around out there. And then he's not on the field. They're subbing in. I don't know, man. I don't know. Something weird going on in L.A.
That O-line's been bad.
Yeah.
And Goff looks a little shook.
Yeah, and they're not going to be able to address the line because they have so much money tied up in other people. It's going to be impossible.
And no picks.
They have no picks. Yeah. They have no picks.
Yeah, no picks.
Yeah, they're running into a really bad situation really quickly. So, all right, next trade. Le'Veon Bell for a late 21st, 22nd, and a 21st second.
Picks.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to sell Le'Veon in a league right now, but it just depends. Like, on that league, I'm sitting pretty, so it's like, dang it, I want to run Le'Veon through the playoff run, but more cases than not, I would take the picks there.
Right, I agree, man. Like, he just doesn't – he looks good, but he doesn't look the same, man. I don't think he's ever going to be that guy we – you know, he was 3 years ago or whatever, so – This one's super duper interesting. Aaron Jones for DeAndre Swift. You guys can take that one, man. That's a tough one.
Matt?
The famous words, right, in a vacuum. I feel like Aaron Jones is like a prime example of somebody capitalizing on opportunity. I feel like they didn't want to give him that job for like the last year and a half. I feel like he's had to fight and claw for it. And there's been times where even he gets less carries than Jamal Williams. I don't love it. I actually think Green Bay drafts a running back. They shot one, you know, towards Dexter Williams this past year. It was later, but I want to say I saw an NFL mock that showed DeAndre Swift going to the Packers, which would make that hilarious. But if we're even grounds here and we're doing a startup or whatever, if we're doing a startup draft and they were all in there, I'd probably take Jones. But if it was straight up trade, don't know anything about it, I'm taking DeAndre Swift, man. Give me the stud, the one who I know it could be good in almost any situation, anywhere. I don't know if I could say the same for Aaron Jones.
Right, he's so maddening of a player. I think he's immensely talented, but that situation he's in, you know, he'll have games where, like last game, where he had like 8 carries for 20 yards but 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like you can't, I mean, I think, I don't know for sure, but he's got to have 12 or 13 touchdowns.
I think he's got 14. I think he's leads the NFL. And for me, I would have DeAndre Swift ranked higher. I just looked at our rankings over on DLF. I've got, if I'm putting Swift in, not, you know, looking at landing spot, I'd have him ranked higher than Aaron Jones. I think they've been trying to replace him, and I agree with Matt. He's a prime example of taking advantage of his opportunities, but I'm following the money. They've yet to, I haven't heard anything about a contract extension. You know, even in the game versus, I believe, Carolina, he had 3 touchdowns on 13 carries. I think Matt LaFleur, I don't think there's anything wrong with Aaron Jones. And I was listening, it may have been J.J. Zacharyson, but he was talking about Aaron Jones's target share with Devontae Adams on the field and with Devontae Adams off of the field. And I think a lot of his production came when Adams missed, 4 or 5 games, and they had no choice but to throw Aaron Jones the ball. But don't mistake him as a weapon out of the backfield. I think he's a product of volume, and if somebody offered me DeAndre Swift for Aaron Jones straight up, I'd probably take Swift. Unless I was contending for the championship and I needed to win now, then I'm keeping Aaron Jones.
Yeah, there's always that caveat. Yeah, definitely. Correct. So, yeah, he's going... I was just pulling up the rankings. My computer is painfully slow. They have him at RB12, which is, I think, crazy for Aaron Jones. I don't know anybody that would draft him as the 12th running back off the board. So,
no.
But I've seen him higher than that.
Ugh. His ADP was 7, it said, but I think that was a little skewed by a couple. That's crazy, man. This is crazy. He's just one of those guys that's maddening to own, I think. I own him in too many leagues, and he's just, he drives you nuts, man. We had one more trade that we found is Edelman and Keenan Allen.
I'm sorry, that was Kyle Allen.
Oh, I'm like, dude, that's an easy trade.
Yeah.
Edelman and Kyle Allen for Najee Harris.
Oh,
that makes a hell of a difference. I'm like, that's not even a question. Okay.
So there was no context there? Yeah, there was no context. I'm assuming it was super flex. The fact that, you know, Kyle Allen was even like a mention in there, if it was a single quarterback, I doubt they'd even be tossing him. But so I'm assuming it's as a super flex format, so Kyle Allen and Julian Edelman for Najee Harris.
Once again, I think if you're a win now, you'd want that Edelman side, but otherwise it's Najee Harris for me by quite a bit.
By a country mile.
Give me Steven Jackson 2.0, man. Let's roll.
I love Matt. I've rarely, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I really love that comp, or I like that. Like, I rarely, like, love comps, but I love that comp of Najee Harris. I do believe he's Steven Jackson 2.0. I can totally see it.
Yeah, it was that, and I know the exact run when I saw him do it during the game. It was like this, he did this double shuffle step, and if I pull it up, you guys remember, right? When I saw him, like, dude, it's Steven Jackson. What are we talking about here, right? It was one of those deals. I'm like, oh, man. Yeah. And I said it to my buddy at the gym, and he looked at me like, bro, like, you, yes. I'm like, I got to go tweet this now. You know what I mean?
Quick, I got a good idea. I got to go. Let's go quick.
Beautiful, man. A lot of people agreed with that, too. I didn't see anybody, like, everybody was like, that's it. You know, that's it. Also, can I add one that I just did so I can give the listeners – because a lot of people think we just talk it, but, like, I truly believe it. So we were talking about selling picks. So this week, last week, and it didn't work out last week because he stunk it up, but I sold it's going to be the 103, the 203, Matt Breida and Jonnu Smith, half-point PPR for running backs, full-point PPR for wide receivers. So I sold the 103, the 203, Matt Breida and Jonnu Smith, and I got Zeke Elliott. I have the 101 in that league, and I also have, like, the 1, probably 09. And I have a very strong team. I'll just give you my core. Running backs, Christian McCaffrey, Joe Mixon, and now Zeke Elliott. Wide receivers, DJ Moore, Cooper Kupp, Michael Thomas, Tyler Boyd, Allen Robinson. So I'm in a win-now mode. To get Zeke Elliott for the 103, the 203, Matt Breida and Jonnu Smith, I had to do it. So I don't just talk about it. To me, that 103, I would be praying that, you know, Jonathan Taylor turns into Ezekiel Elliott sooner rather than later. But I'm in win-now mode. To get Zeke for those picks, I felt it was a no-brainer for my situation. Yeah, so
beautiful trade. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful trade.
Yeah, I love that.
And that's that kind of, that will kind of lead to our next segment. You know, that's, you know, that everybody wants to acquire those 2020 picks, these 2020 Devy guys. So why don't you, and Ray has been talking about this for a couple weeks, and I think it's a good strategy. Zig when everybody else is zagging, you know, that you can get so much for these guys right now. You know, trade your picks away. Why not? You know, like if you're, specifically applies more to if you've got a team that's kind of, you know, five and five on the fringe, you know, you don't want to implode your team, you know, trade your picks, see what you can get. Cause there's guys get just given away veterans at this point, you know, the guys that are 0-9 and 2-8 and whatever like that. They're just wanting to give away those veterans. And I'm not saying trade a first round pick for Larry Fitzgerald, but I mean, you know, like trade for those guys that are 28, 29, you know, trying to draw a blanket examples here. If you guys can help me out. Yeah. Like,
my favorite one this whole season, and it's funny, his price has been up and down, but Marvin Jones, like if you're contending, he is a cheap, easy buy. I bought him for a third in one league. I've seen him go for, you know, late seconds if necessary after a couple of those blowups. But if you're contending, I mean, how much does it cost to get Kenny Golladay right now? It's super expensive. You can get Marvin Jones from the guy who's got him, who's like, what am I ever going to do with this guy if I'm 3-7 or whatever else now, right? Go get a guy like that for the cheap.
Here's a couple that I see that I can think of. Derrick Henry. You know, if you've got a team that's down there and not contending, you know, some people are just really down on Derrick Henry.
I bought him today.
Throw a mid-round first at him. Screw it.
Got him for a second. You know, Derrick Henry, yeah. I got him for a 2026. Well, I had a player in there as well, too. There was a player in there, and I got a pick back, but I got Derrick Henry for a second, you know?
That's naughty. Yeah, that's like Chris Carson's another one. He's only 25. He's got that backfield, you know? Like, Tevin Coleman's look good. You can probably get him pretty cheap still. It's just amazing, you know, the things you can do with picks right now. You can get these guys that are kind of, you know, and they may not look the greatest, but these are the guys that will help you build your team, you know, that will build you to a strong team down the road. So zig when everybody else is zagging. I like that. Ray's been talking about it for a little while, so it's kind of one thing I wanted to bring up.
Well, you even threw out a name earlier, too, in Juju, right, who's obviously having a really down year. It's been a bad year all around, right? No Ben, whatever else. Juju, you could probably be bought right now. You know, for a mid first, I don't know. I mean, I could see people wanting to get rid of that or move off from that.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, even in the same game right now, Jarvis Landry is like an afterthought, but he's been the more consistent receiver on this football team, you know, over the past whatever month or so. So hey, he could be bought easily.
Allen Robinson.
And probably.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Or these guys that are hurt, you know, throw a mid second at like Austin Hooper. Why not? You know, especially if the contender's out, you know, yeah, that'll help you next year, man. That's, you know, a lot of those guys like that just take advantage of your picks and use them for leverage, you know, don't just automatically hold them and just wait. Cause as good as the class is next year, none of it's still a lock. You know, we can never, ever, they could end up in terrible landing spots. And yeah, so just something, you know, something to think about when you're getting down there toward the end of the season right now and you're thinking about what direction you want to take. You don't always have to rebuild. This is something I kind of fallen into the mode that I see too many teams, and I did it my first couple of years, is when I was like 3-7, I would just start selling off every piece I had.
Yeah.
And it's like, then you're always going to be rebuilding. You're always going to be rebuilding. You can't do that. At some point you have to build, you know? So I see too many teams just, I'm going to rebuild. I'm going to tear it down. Like, you don't necessarily have to, man. So you want to find those owners and take advantage of them if you can. So, yes, I just said that. That sounds really bad. But anyways.
So, name of the game.
Yep. All right. And on that same, we did have another loser. Oh, God damn it.
A loser question.
I ain't done that in a while.
Loser question. Loser.
The only loser is the host. Anyways, Joshua asks, perhaps you would have some time to go over some pointers on completely rebuilding a team. I'm new to Devi, and this team is really bad. You see, we're doing pretty good on time. We're only about 50 minutes, so you guys want to tackle this one? This is a tough one, because I have a couple teams like this that I took over this year, and they are very, very bad.
So I guess first and foremost, I took over one the year before. That was awful. New owner, right? Usually if you're taking over, if you have a complete rebuild, hopefully that's an orphan type team or whatever, or you didn't get there yourself. But first things first is go figure out who is who in the league and who likes who on your squad. Figure out your business moves. So if you go start talking to, if I join in a league with you two guys, don't know you. Hey, what's up, Ray? Hey, new league, man, trying to see who you like, what's going on. You're like, hey, man, I really want Derrick Henry. What's Derrick Henry going to cost to get him off your team? And if it's a true rebuild, then I know I can start negotiating with you on that tip. Like you just said, like, you don't have to get rid of Keenan Allen because you think that he's older. He's only 27 years old. That doesn't – I mean, he could work with the rebuild. I'm a big fan of – even when I'm rebuilding, I don't want my rebuild to be a 3-year plan. I feel like if I'm trying to rebuild for 3 years, that's too deep, and too much can happen between now and then. So I'm trying to be relevant next season, even if that means trying to rebuild a little bit differently. So not just going for all first round picks the next year or whatever. I want to be taking a player in a later pick and moving that up for something, or a different type player like a Marvin Jones that we're talking about. If I can assemble like a, you don't want to be middle of the road, but if I can assemble that type of roster to now create my next wave of moves, that's kind of what I'm looking to do. So I wish he would have provided his team. That probably would have helped us out a little bit. But, man, I mean, you can go fire sell, you can go whatever, but my first bit of advice is go figure out who's in your league and figure out who they like and what pieces they have that you can get from them that you think assists in your rebuild.
This is something that, like I said, the first couple of years, I made a lot of mistakes. One of my big ones was having a bad team like this and only having one or two good pieces and thinking I had to sell them. You don't have to sell them. You need to keep that Christian McCaffrey. You know, you can trade him for probably 3 or 4 first-round picks, but those 3 or 4 first-round picks are not going to be as valuable as Christian McCaffrey. When you come – and I sometimes you fall into that pratfall of wanting to – now, if somebody offers you like 8 picks or something, you know, you'd probably be kind of stupid to turn it down. But most offers you get are not going to be good enough. And that guy's worth a lot more to you than what you think he is. So, Ray, you got anything on that one, man?
Yeah, I think it really depends on your league format as well. Because if you're in a Devi league, I took over a horrible team in a Devi league that when I took over, they had already completed the Devi auction. So now my team stinks, and the upcoming draft is absolutely terrible. And, you know, when you're a new owner taking over a bad team, everybody is just going to offer you crap. And I think Dwight's point, you don't have to sell. Like, just be like, I'm not doing anything. Like, I'm not selling you, you know, Patrick Mahomes for the low just because my team stinks and you think I need picks. And he's like the only building block that I have. And I did have to sell off some assets. But don't feel like you have to accept rock bottom prices, because if somebody in that league, they probably have a strong team, they think they can contend. So just hold off a little bit and you'll probably get better offers. It's tough, man, because in this one, I don't want to drop. But my team, the team that I took over, is so bad that I just don't think... I don't know if there's any hope. Like, I'm so far behind the eight ball. And in a Devi league, once all of the good talent is already eaten up, and I know we talked about depleted drafts, but those are picks that you'd like to have if you've already had a chance to acquire DeAndre Swift and Travis Etienne, not building your team off of the Isaiah Hodgins and Devin Duvernays of the world. So, you know, I don't know. It's just tough. That one is tough.
Is that Tyler's team you took over in Heisman?
No, his team, that team is actually all right. It's McDowell got me in the kitchen sink league, and it was an inactive owner who did nothing.
Now, you see, now we said that, but then there's also, if there are Devi involved, you can actually make good deals if you know the players. Like, if the picks are a little more gambly, I know that sounds silly, but if you do your research, you know, and somebody's offering you, you know, like Tua and Jonathan Taylor and... you know, CeeDee Lamb for Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
If you know who they are, that makes it a little bit different. You could probably get more, honestly. But I'm just saying, when you know the players, it definitely makes it a little more interesting. And you can really accelerate your rebuild if you do your research and take advantage of what pieces you can to get, you know, Devy talent that you know. You know, but when you're dealing with picks, it's all random, man. It's all... So, yeah. Good advice from both of you guys on that one. I like that one. And our last user question is, no idea what to do with Eason and Fromm. They're all over the place in mocks and articles. Do they come out or stay? Current value. Does the 2020 NFL have a place for their styles? Now, we already talked a little bit about Fromm. And do you think he comes out next year?
I'm almost leaning that he stays.
I think I think that'd be in his best interest, but I think he's going to declare. I think Swift is gone. I think he's going to come out. I think he's going to get good when they do that NFL evaluation thing. I think he's going to get first round grade. What's the point to stay? You know, so he can be the third quarterback for sure with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and have to deal with Brock Purdy and those other guys, or, you know, go out now and be a top 15 pick in the NFL draft. So to answer that question, is there a place for him in the NFL? Absolutely. Is there a place for him on my fantasy roster right now as far as Jake Fromm? Absolutely not. You know, and hopefully he can prove me wrong. But a quarterback averaging 8 yards an attempt is just – he's careful in college, man. His highest in his career was 10 yards an attempt. I mean, I want you pushing the ball downfield. I want you taking chances. And he's just somebody that I have zero interest in. I have more interest in Jacob Eason because I've seen him actually do it. Granted, he's only done it for half of the season, but I've seen him do it. So that's my answer to that question.
Yeah, I can see Eason staying. I don't know, though. I guess it just depends. Does he want to compete with those, you know, Lawrence and Fields and stuff? So. But I could see him being advised to stay and staying. So I think it would help his stock, honestly. Unless he goes out on the season, you know, and does really good these last couple games, maybe he'll think twice. But there's definitely a place for him in the NFL. He's got the arm and he's also intelligent and all that. So, yeah, there's definitely a place for both of those guys. I don't think both of those guys are going to be like your Aaron Rodgers, your Mahomes, your Wilsons, you know, the guys that are just going to take over games and win them by themselves. But they're both... They're all both really good quarterbacks, so yeah, just
it might not hurt Fromm to stay in Georgia, not at the University of Georgia, but in Atlanta for the Falcons and sit behind Matt Ryan for a couple of years. I know the NFL's not really doing that anymore. They want to get those guys in fast, but you know, that offense, the way that they operate, you don't have to be a gunslinger, you know what I'm saying? It might really benefit him to sit behind Matt Ryan for a year or two.
I've got an offer on the table. 3 2021st, a 2022nd, and a 2023rd for my Saquon Barkley.
Man, what are the first projected as? And they all this year?
What do you mean? Yeah, the first are all 2020. 3 2021st, mid 2021sts, a mid 2022nd, and a mid 2023rd for my Saquon Barkley.
What's the team look like? Are you competing right now?
Yeah. See, and that's, you know, when you talk about rebuild, and for me in Dynasty, I try to have my cake and eat it too. Like, I want to compete, but I also want to try to set myself up for longevity. So, you know, like for me in Superflex leagues, I build everything around my quarterbacks. Every Superflex team I have, I'm very, very strong at the quarterback position. And then I feel like I can figure everything else out after that. So I kind of play that game where I want to have Mahomes and Watson as my quarterbacks and a strong running back and Tyreek Hill at receiver and then still have, you know, two 2021st, a couple of 2023rds. So it's another interesting game, you know what I mean, to try to be savvy enough to pull that off, to be competitive year in and out, but still be able to play around in the rookie drafts to acquire young talent. Because I think conversely – we talked about selling off picks for talent. You don't want to be stuck in a spot where you don't have picks the next 2 years. You don't want to be the Rams.
Right, right.
You don't want to be the LA Rams. So you got to be careful with just dumping everything, and then you're sitting around the rookie drafts like, well, I got Julio, but he's 32 now, and I have no picks, so I've got to dig. You know, you don't want to do that.
A lot of times, those are the ones that leave the league, man.
Yep.
They get mad, they get upset because they ain't got no picks, and yeah, they just bounce.
Yep.
You know, because that's just mismanagement, you know. And
so be careful with that. Be careful with that.
I've been getting, you know, what's been bugging me? I've been getting lowballed. What do you guys feel about Calvin Ridley? I'm wondering if I'm too high on Calvin Ridley, or if I'm just everything I'm getting is just like lowballer value.
Good number two, never a number one. That's how I feel about him.
Why couldn't he be a number one? But the reason we think he can never be a number one because of Julio's there. Julio's not a forever item.
I don't think it's that. I just don't think he. I don't think he's that type of player, man. I think he's better. I think he, just like Tyler Boyd, could he be a number one? Sure, but I think he thrives better as a number two option. Jarvis Landry, the same way. He could be a number one, but I think Calvin Ridley's best served with an alpha kind of taking the attention of the top attention of the defense, and then him thriving in that number two role, and that's fine. But I just don't see him being, and I know I'm going to make y'all mad here, Juju Smith-Schuster, and I love Juju. I think he's a better number two than number one, personally.
No, I'm with personally. You. It's like Godwin. I think Godwin would be in the same boat. If Evans left there, I don't think Godwin would be. We would be seeing Juju this year.
Correct.
You know what I mean? I'm with that, though. So what would be the cheapest you would sell him? Say, you know, rookie draft picks next year, no Debbie.
He's still going for first. He's late first.
Yeah, I'm not selling for anything later than, like, middle to late first. Like, that feels like that's – you're just pushing at that point, right? Yeah, I'm with that. I'm getting like second round offers and stuff. I'm like, y'all better leave me alone with all this. I'm on a hold then.
Because late one, you're praying Tyler Johnson turns into Calvin Ridley with, you know,
yeah.
Late one. No, I wouldn't do that. It's got to be, I'm with you. Pick eight would probably be my cutoff point for second
right.
Ridley.
Just for the fun of it, I went and looked at DTC's calculator today. They have, you know how rookie picks are. Their rookie pick 101 is equivalent to Calvin Ridley right now. But, you know, I'll take the 101 over Ridley all day. It's just funny how that was. It just made me laugh when I saw that compared to getting second-round pick offers. All right. I guess we're back on track.
No, it's good. That was fun, man. I'll probably leave most of that in. All right, guys. Ray, you tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter and where they can what you're working on and all the good stuff, man.
Yeah, on Twitter at RayGQ, Q-U-E, Destination Devi Pod. Every Monday, it's coming out, recapping the games, Devi Prospects. Doing some new stuff at DLF. Hopefully, that'll be rolling out here shortly, so check that out. And then over here, Devi Happy Hour, man. Have fun with these two. It's good. I hope you guys are learning from this and taking something away from it because we enjoy disseminating this information. So that's what I got going on.
I could echo Ray, less the DDP, less the DLF, less all the other stuff he's got going on. But no, at Commissioner McGriff on Twitter, I love interacting with y'all on there. Obviously doing the Debbie Happy Hour with these two fine gentlemen, which takes up the bulk of my time. I am kind of kicking a couple little articles off just because it's fun and we're getting to that time of year and this is what I love to do. So hopefully get something out, you know, some stuff before the end of the season. And other than that, man, same old good stuff from me.
Find me on Twitter at FFPeoplesChamp, writing DLF. So hard trying to find some time to do some of these prospect videos that Ray and Brandon Lejeune, and there's some really good guys out there that put together these amazing videos. And what Ray's got on board for DLF is this just super exciting stuff. So Ray's like a big mover and shaker, guys. Like if you don't follow him, if you don't, you know, stalk him on Twitter, you're doing something wrong. So you can find this pod at Devi Happy Hour. You can email us at devihappyhour@gmail.com, and we will talk to you guys next week.